It's a Sonic1029.com presentation. The Lane Mitchell Show podcast from Sonic1029.com.
Hey, thanks so much for downloading the 229th edition of the Lane Mitchell Show podcast. Highlights from the past week's shows and an unabridged version of our interview with Sebastian Grainger. Kind of an interesting chat about, not only the new album, but his interesting choices in terms of the album art.
You know, we were drinking beer and trying to have fun with it. And as I was cleaning off the front yard, you know, I had the hose out.
Did he ever? Oh, that's good stuff. You just can't buy a segue like that. It is actually kind of an interesting parallel to the album, though. We'll get into that shortly. Thanks again for downloading. If you enjoy the podcast, follow me on Twitter at Laneroo, LayneRoo, or search Lane Mitchell on Facebook.
Lane Mitchell, podcast from Sonic1029.com.
Movie news, Fast and Furious 7 has been delayed following the death of actor Paul Walker. The crew is expected to begin filming last Sunday. That has been pushed forward till later this week. The movie is still expected to hit theaters on July 11th. And hundreds gathered from all over the world to take part in the World Memory Championships, during which contestants are asked to memorize more than 450,000 pieces of information, all during a three-day competition, which would be like remembering the names, birthdays, and phone numbers of every man, woman, and child in the city of Red Deer. Pretty amazing. And Sharon Osbourne went under the knife to have some work done recently, after which her face didn't look tighter, lips didn't look fuller, nor did her breasts look perkier. So, what exactly did she have done? Well, she had her down there tightened up. Yeah. No word on whether or not it was cosmetic, to enhance sexual pleasure, or just to get a better grip on a unicycle seat when riding naked. She describes the procedure as excruciating. I'll take your word for it.
Lane Mitchell Podcast from Sonic1029.com.
Man of Steel star Henry Cavill is Glamour Magazine's sexiest man alive. Oh, but wait. Adam Levine is People Magazine's sexiest man alive. You know what that means, right?
It's a sexiest man of the year cage match.
Now think it over, it could be fun. And a man was arrested for throwing dollar bills to Black Friday shoppers at the Mall of America. The guy dropped $1,000 in singles from the mall's third floor. The best part, he timed it to the choir's performance of Let It Snow. And I'm not sure what a PS4 costs here, but I'm pretty sure they're cheaper here than in Brazil. You know, due to that country's outrageous import tax, to buy a PS4 there, it's $1,800. Which, to be fair, is actually kind of a small upcharge to be able to chuckle every time you say Brazilian. Other gaming news, Lindsay Lohan is suing the makers of Grand Theft Auto V, claiming one of the characters looks like her. Which could set a dangerous precedent. Consider all the guys with a slight potbelly that did Movember this year. Turn that into a class action lawsuit, well, it could be game over for Super Mario.
The Lane Mitchell Show. It's Lane Mitchell. Podcast from Sonic1029.com.
Applebee's is installing 100,000 touchscreen tablets at their restaurants. Customers will be able to place orders and even play games. Finally, the burden of conversation has been lifted. So that 15% tip you're expected to leave, that will just be for, what, the luxury of having somebody drop by the minute your mouth is full to ask, how are those first few bites tasting, And speaking of restaurants, while our internet statuses may try to convince you otherwise, our love affair with McDonald's continues. The chain has added 1,400 new locations this year alone. Worldwide, the company employs more than 1.8 million people, about the population of Calgary and Edmonton combined. And Merriam-Webster is named the Word of the Year for 2013. Now, I was expecting something like twerk, selfie, hashtag maybe. So you'll understand my surprise when I learned it was actually science. Yeah, the word science, seriously, word of the year for 2013. The term was searched more than 100 million times per month, 176% increase over the year before. Hey, I mean, a guy's got to kill time somehow while waiting for that artichoke dip at Applebee's, right?
It's a Sonic1029.com podcast.
If you're planning to spend the holiday season in Las Vegas, couple of things to notice next time you're in the casino. No clocks, no windows. Yeah, they don't like you knowing what time it is. If you're having fun, they want you to stick around. And did you know that if you were to add up all the numbers on a roulette wheel, they would add up to precisely 666? It's true. And you know, if I were a betting man, I would say there would not be a zombie apocalypse this holiday season. However, to my complete surprise, a betting agency in London is now taking wagers on just such an occurrence. Ladbrokes is offering 2,001 odds that a zombie apocalypse will occur on Christmas Day.
Shotgun blasts blowing off their heads. They'll eat your brain. They're the undead. I've got one in my sights. We're hunting zombies tonight. A Walking Dead winter wonderland.
And it was on this date way back in 1956, the first bra and lingerie catalog came out. Wow, can you imagine the wait in line outside the men's room that day? Are you still catalog shopping in there?
It's Lane Mitchell, podcast from Sonic1029.com.
Okay, if you had to choose Christmas party or Christmas bonus, which would you go for? Well, if you said bonus, you're not alone. According to a recent survey, 71% of us would rather get the cash bonus than watch poor Jenny from payroll drunkenly hobble on one broken heel and pour herself into a cab. Seems kind of like less and less companies are doing the Christmas parties. Is it a liability thing? I don't know. It's kind of sad, though. Call me old-fashioned, but to me, it just isn't Christmas until somebody gets drunk and sleeps with a coworker. And speaking of trying to clumsily plug something into a socket, you've ever tried to plug a USB connector in? You know how frustrating it can be to tell which side is up? You're always fumbling around with it. Well, those days could soon be behind us. There's apparently a new USB connector in the works that, like Apple's Lightning Dock connector, will be reversible. It'll be called USB Type-C. And the 2014 color of the year has been revealed. The world's foremost color authorities say it's Radiant Orchid. Experts describe the shade as a captivating, magical, and enigmatic purple. Rednecks describe it as sissy.
The Lane Mitchell Show, podcast from Sonic1029.com.
Hello?
Hey, I'm looking for Sebastian.
Hi, this is Sebastian.
Hey, it's Lane Mitchell calling from Sonic Radio in Edmonton.
How you doing?
Doing great. Congratulations on the new album, man.
Thank you.
I have to say, you know, when I listened to it, the first thing I thought is, this sounds exactly like Sebastian Granger and absolutely nothing like Death From Above 1979. How did you accomplish that?
Well, it's pretty easy. I think that what Death From Above do is very specific, and it's, I mean, I'm just writing and producing the way I want to hear music. So that's what I do when I do my soul material. But with Jesse, it's, you know, we're just trying to be louder than one another all the time. So you get a different sound, you know?
Well, I think you can't help but sort of assume whatever you're going to come out with is going to sound something like whatever your last album was. And you look at that, though, that was like 10 years ago. There was obviously a transition period. Were there any sort of awkward songwriting moments where you sort of did something that was between Your Woman, I'm Machine and this, that you kind of went, wow, no, this just isn't working?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm like a pretty, I'm a pretty confident fellow, so pretty much anything I do, I get behind. Death From Above is by far the most well-known thing I've done, but in the scheme of what I've done musically, it's an anomaly in how heavy and in what it sounds like. You know, I've worked with pop artists in New Zealand. I've worked with Chaos here in Canada. I've worked with a bunch of kind of pop artists. And really the thing that stands out of the list of my accomplishments is Death From Above. It stands out, I mean, in popularity, but also in what it sounds like. I mean, it's the weird thing that I do. And everything else is more aligned with what my solo music sounds like. So, I mean, there's a duality, and if for some reason it's not difficult for me to separate the two things.
You co-own a studio with Jimmy from Metric, right? Giant Studios?
I did. I don't anymore. I left Toronto a year ago and left all that behind.
Actually, based on you know, some of the song names, I get the distinct impression that you may have moved to the States.
What gives you that impression?
I'm a perceptive fellow, aren't I?
You're very good.
Now, last time Emily and I spoke, I asked her if you guys ever play together, and she sent me this amazing cover that they did of Black History Month. Now, I pretty much have to ask you, do you ever cover any of Metric stuff? You know, just jamming or in the studio?
No, not really. I mean, I'm a fan of a lot of their songs. They just put out a video for Lost Kitten, which is probably my favorite song they've ever written. And I think it sounds great, and it's just such a great song. And I mean, we've kind of been following one another for a really long time, you know, since arguably the beginning of at least people's awareness of both of our bands. But we don't really, you know, there are moments in the studio when, you know, people will get together and do stuff. I sang on a track for them. The last one was in Toronto in July, and we just kind of have fun with it. But it's more just, you know, we get along and we don't really collaborate too much. But I think it's great when, you know, I mean, that cover was great.
Let's talk album art. Are you still scrubbing red face paint out of your beard?
No, I'm not. It was actually, it's Hindi holy powder. So it's like a, it's actually a powder. But it's a very vibrant, these powders are very, very vibrant. So it ends up looking like this really thick paint, but it's really just a powder that, I mean, if you get a little bit on you, you're that color, you know, it's pretty incredible.
Now, okay, was that your first color choice or did you try blue and you were afraid you'd get sued by the Smurfs or?
No, I wanted to do it in white because there was a photo that my wife took of me after a video shoot I did a couple of years ago where I had a white face and it was a very bold photograph. And we were trying to replicate that, and I went looking for different colors, and this was actually the only color that was available. So it ends up looking a bit like the Canadian flag on the cover. You know, it was done on a whim. You know, the sun was about to go down, and I decided to run out and get some of that powder and throw it on me, and my wife snapped a couple of dozen photographs, and that's the one that we picked for the cover. It was just, to me, it was a very striking image. The colors are so powerful. I mean, we used to, Jesse and I used to eat in Little India all the time on Girard in Toronto. And you could go into these shops and buy all kinds of amazing things. And this powder is one of them. And when you see it, you just want to touch it because it's like, it's almost a magical color, you know, like the color choices are really amazing.
Interesting. Now, I don't want to dwell too much on the album art. I want to talk more about the music, but I do have one last question, and you know sure. It's coming. You've probably been asked a million times now, but displaying your junk in your album art.
Yeah. No, I actually, no one's asked me that question.
Oh, really?
Shockingly. Okay, let me explain. I mean, we were having this photo shoot, my wife and I, and she's been taking photographs. She took the photograph on the inside of Death Row and Above's first record, You're a Woman on a Machine. So she's been taking pictures of me for a very long time. And, you know, obviously we're very comfortable with one another. And we were doing this photo shoot in our front yard for the cover. And there were all these outtakes. You know, we were drinking beer and kind of trying to have fun with it. And as I was cleaning off the front yard, because, you know, this powder was everywhere, you know, I had the hose out and I exposed myself as a moment between her and I, as like a joke, you know, we're like having fun. And the image that ended up, you know, being that image, I mean, she saw it when she was selecting the photos and she didn't see the not safe for work component of it. She just saw this photo of me looking like I was really having a good time. And she was like, this photo has to be the cover or has to be on the inside. And I was like, yeah, but I'm exposed in it. And she's like, oh, I didn't even notice until, you know, and the attention, you know, then becomes that, but it's this moment that, you know, and it goes along with the statement of the record, Yours to Discover. I'm putting myself out there on this record, you know, lyrically, musically, and the whole thing. So it just made sense. I act on instinct with my solo music, and I don't really think twice about things. This is a hard thing to not think twice about, but I tried not to. And, you know, I decided to do it in kind of an instant and just stuck with it. And, you know, it's strange. I had to phone my family and let them know so that they weren't shocked. And
well, plus you can use the photo on the cover of your Christmas cards, right?
Just a close-up. Yeah, next to a glass of eggnog.
I feel sort of stupid for overlooking the sort of yours to discover sort of parallel. I was actually kind of thinking it was sort of like a boyhood innocence kind of thing. You know, it's like you're playing in the yard, you get the hose out.
Yeah, there are all kinds of ways to perceive that image.
Now, like I say, everybody is 10 years behind on what we perceive of Sebastian Granger, which is why this album was so engaging, I think. It was kind of shocking for a lot of people, and in a pleasant way. What kinds of things were you listening to?
There were, you know, obviously there are references to, you know, Prince and Michael Jackson and those kinds of performers, but that's just music I've been listening to, you know, my entire life. And it's difficult to suppress those instincts and those urges to produce and write in that way. There's this blog that I go to called The Beat Electric, and it's run by this guy out of San Francisco. And he posts this really obscure 70s, 80s funk and soul music that's electronically produced. And it's this kind of proto, like, synth funk. And there's just tons of this material out there that is totally obscure that, you know, not a lot of people know about. But this guy curates these blog posts, and I go on there all the time and just download whatever he puts up, because the musicianship on these songs is incredible. And it's a very inspiring kind of music. I mean, it's very soulful and yet very sexy, very fun, very downtown sounding. And that's what I wanted for this record.
Part of what kind of shocks me about this, I feel like if you released this record 5 years ago, people would dismiss it as being weird. People weren't ready for this.
I don't think they're ready for it now.
But you know what? It came out now, and I feel like people are very receptive to this kind of music now. But what's fascinating to me is that you probably started writing these songs a couple of years ago when it would have been horribly unpopular.
I mean, the very first thing I did after Death Row and Bob broke up was I started making music that was very similar to what this music ended up sounding like. And so I've been writing in that way. The reason why my last solo record was such a rock sounding record is because I was booked on a tour before I had any recordings, and I put a band together to play live, and I wasn't interested in going up and playing with a laptop, or I don't think laptops existed back then. I wasn't interested in going up and playing solo. I wanted a band. I wanted that visceral live band experience. And so that's what dictated the sound of the record. But I was already experimenting with, you know, with drum machines and they're on the, you know, I'm using the same equipment that I used on the last record. It's just, the songs were not written on guitar this time. They were written on bass or on synthesizer.
Now, I'm a gearhead, so forgive me for asking, but what did you record this on? Was it mixed out of the box, in the box?
It was mixed out of the box. It was done between, you know, Giant Studio, maybe another studio, and my living room. I have this kind of mobile rig that I work on. And I could just sit in front of it and do exactly what I want. I was using, you know, my old four-track recorder. I was using a lot of vintage analog gear, you know, tube amps, tube preamps, big solid-state weird things, you know, all kinds of just stuff that makes noise. You know, you plug it in and it makes noise. So there's a lot of those artifacts on the record. And, you know, the mixing was part of the job, was to rein those things in. But I love the sound of electricity. I love when you plug something in and you put your headphones on and you could hear it. You can hear it working. You can hear the wall. You know, you can hear the street in it. I think that's, you know, especially in an era where it's so easy to just make music on a computer that's strictly in the box. That's fine too, and that's, you know, it's a very new way of making music. I like to mix all of the eras of production into what I do. So that means plugging stuff in and hoping for happy accidents. You know, running a delay that's not perfect and hoping that it'll come out of time, just so that creates a tension, you know, within the music. Those are fun things for me to do. That's like playground stuff.
That's where the fairy dust comes from, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I have to ask, Death From Above 1979, I heard there was a new album in the works. It's kind of like the music industry's worst kept secret. We were all looking forward to that, and then you surprised us with this incredible album. I am still curious, though, is that DFA album sort of on the back burner? Are you going to tour this first before that comes out?
I don't know what I'm going to do with this record. I didn't ever plan on touring these songs, so I was producing in a way that I didn't have to worry about that. Sometimes you produce in a way that you're like, well, how am I going to replicate this live? I didn't worry about that on this record. And in my mind, I was going to add it to my canon of work. And then eventually, instead of taking one or two records on the road, you know, take three or four records on the road and really make a great show out of it. And I mean, as far as Death From Above goes, I generally don't like to talk about Death From Above unless Jesse's around. If it's any indication, he's in Toronto and I'm in Los Angeles right now. But we talk on the phone every day, so things are going well.
Can we expect a tour date in the not-too-distant future for this album?
I may or may not be in your city soon or in the future. How vague is that?
You should be a politician.
We're trying to get Jesse to run for prime minister, though.
Well, I hear there could be an opening soon for a new mayor in Toronto, so.
We'll see.
Thanks so much, Sebastian Granger. Congratulations on the new album.
Thank you very much.
It's Lane Mitchell Podcast. Want to hear more like it? Check out the Garner Andrews Show daily podcast and more at sonic1029.com.